Thank you very much indeed. First of all, I'd like to dedicate this talk to Astapriya, to Priyavardhita, to Mokshapriya, Dhiramati and Nagapriya. Might become a bit apparent why a bit later on, but that's what I want to dedicate the talk, which is odd because I don't think it has much to do with Buddhafield. So I finally found a title for this talk. It's called Top Down Meets Bottom Up, or Ground Up, Buddhafield. Top down means ground up. I think I ought to say a sort of number of general things about Buddhafield. It's great to know that so many people have been on a Buddhafield, something or other. So I've been trying to think, what could I say? And what would it be useful for me to say? And I've not found this particularly easy. And one way of saying why it's not easy, because there are an awful lot of people involved in Buddhafield. And they work and live in all kinds of different ways, and I can't talk for them. It normally doesn't go down very well when I talk for them. So what can I say? So that's kind of my problem. So first of all, I'll give you a brief overview of some of the things that Buddhafield does, then look at a few characteristics of Buddhafield, leading to a little more of a look at this top-down meets ground-up theme. And then after that, I'm going to talk about what I do in Buddhafield and what inspires me in Buddhafield, which is team-based practice, really, being part of a team. So I'll look at that later on. So, what does Buddhafield do? So it's a bit of a quick summary. So Buddhafield holds retreats. We hold a season of retreats each year. There's a team of people that hold those retreats. They've kind of had all kinds of themes and styles over the years. And a whole load of those sort of retreats have come and gone. They've been popular themes. They arise, they disappear. At the moment, and they've got quite a longevity to them, in Buddhafield, there's a very popular family-friendly retreat, and there's a month-long meditation retreat, a total immersion retreat. And I'm not going to say anything else about the retreats, because I don't have much to do with them, but I thought I'd put it in the picture. Then there's the Buddhafield Festival. I want to say quite a bit more about this, but in a way, it's a 5-day festival for 3,000 people. So a few of you, I think, will have been to the festival, but quite a few won't. So I think I just want to introduce it a bit more. So I just want to say there are 3,000 people at this event. I think that's an incredible potential. And most of those people, I think, have got some kind of respect for Buddhafield, whatever that may be. Something is inspiring them. Something's attracting them to want to come to it. And I feel they're kind of receptive to something in Buddhafield. Can't put it any more specifically than that. Another thing to say about the Buddhafield Festival, it is not a retreat. Please don't ever come on a Buddhafield festival expecting a retreat. And that most of the people there are not Buddhist. A number of them are, but quite a few of them have got no idea that there are Buddhists holding this festival. They're just turning up to a festival. But I say, I do think it's a very good place to communicate to these people. There's a degree of receptivity there. Curious thing about the Buddhafield Festival, there's a number of people from Buddhafield, a number of people from around the order helping to create this festival, and then we create this festival with a number of other people who come from just the people that Buddhafield has met over the years. So we're not entirely putting this festival on. It's a meeting of worlds, and it's a mutual thing. And I think that is very archetypally Buddhafield, that way of creating something. So the other point is that as well as loads of people coming to the festival, there are hundreds, literally hundreds of people who want to come and create this festival. And, you know, there are hundreds of people who work on teams creating different parts of the festival. And I want to talk about them quite specifically. One last thing about the Buddhafield Festival. How can you hold a Buddhafield Festival? How can you put 3,000 people in a field and kind of steer them in a reasonably sensible direction or reasonably positive direction? This question has often been on my mind. So how do you do that? One factor is you just do it time and time again, and it builds up and up and up. People kind of know how it goes. They know how to behave to a certain degree, what to expect. But a way I like to think about this is that a key part of it is that there are lots of Buddhists at the festival. So they might not be leading anything in particular at the festival. But I think having a few hundred practicing Buddhists amongst these 3,000 people holds the space. That's what I've thought over the years. You could look at it another way. You might think it's a security guard who's holding the festival, or the stewards, or the people who are leading things at a festival. I mean, that all these things make a big contribution, but I just think it's the Sangha being amongst these other people that holds the space. Because it's just not like other festivals. Other festivals, people get up to all manner of things. I think they get up to all manner of things at the Buddhist festival, but there's a sort of a quantitative kind of change in the number of people who are being naughty, shall we say. Yeah? So, moving on, that's the Buddhafield Festival in overview. The Buddhafield Cafe is another thing we do. It's a mobile cafe that appears at various festivals throughout the year. We turn up in a number of trucks, we put up a marquee, we put in a kitchen, we set it all up, and we serve food. We serve a lot of food. A hell of a lot of food. So, why on earth do we do that? Or why do I do that? And for me, I would like to say it's all a ruse. I'm not really interested in cafes. You know? Just a moderate amount of interest, but it's not a lot of interest. It's just a ruse, a way of keeping the team together. It's just a way of holding a space where a number of people are going to be together, bump into each other, practice together to become more self-aware. And I find it's an excellent way of doing that. It's a very sort of bonding experience for these people doing that, and they're together for at least, that's got a little pocket of time, at least 5 days at a time. So that's what I see it's been about. A cafe is just the outer kind of appearance. It's also about going out and meeting people. You know, it's odd, they might be our customers or just other people we meet at a festival, but there's a meeting of people. The other thing about Buddhafield Cafe is, I would say, it seems to be tremendously attractive. By which I mean, we've got volunteers, just loads of volunteers, wanting to come and help at our cafe. I describe our situation as having to knock off the volunteers with a stick. They're just coming at us over the internet, emailing, telephoning, etc. And I find that's quite a remarkable situation to be in. We're not paying these people anything. You know, they want to come and be part of this cafe and to do this thing, which I think is an incredibly fantastic situation. They're just attracted to being part of a team. I suppose they're attracted by something a bit alternative. Sure, a whole lot of them probably just want a free ticket into a festival. They probably get something else other than that when they come meet us, because they just get to meet us. And there's a certain amount of Dharma they will meet. There's a certain amount of Buddhism they will meet. But on some level, it's just attractive. There's an ethical stance that's attractive. I've also got to think, I think there's a sense that the fact that cafe is mobile, is transient. It appears and it disappears. It's obvious we're not in it for the money. That maybe some people would think that, but it just doesn't really generate much money. And so I've got a sense of it's sort of there's a community that's gone forth to a certain degree, not in a very profound manner, but it's kind of it's not a business kind of right in the world. I think people are attracted to that. Yeah, so that's a bit about the Buddhafield Cafe. So other things that Buddhafield does, it teaches meditation and Buddhism at festivals. Very interesting. Loads to say about that, but I'm not going to say anything because I've got too many things to say. Buddhafield has some land. So over the years, we've bought some land. And I would say Buddhafield is learning to look after that land and learning to grow things on that land. The main thing is it seems to be very inspirational for people to know that Buddhafield's got some land and they can come and do something on that land. That seems to attract people. People want to do that. I think it's probably a very, very important point there. But again, I'm not going to talk about Buddhafield's land today. Another way of looking at Buddhafield is a Sangha. I kind of work within quite a sort of small team of people within Butterfield and some communities which are down in Devon, but the Butterfield Sangha is, I tend to sort of say, it's generally spread over the south of England. So it's really quite a broad network of people. I think a lot of people like to identify with Butterfield. They think of themselves as part of Butterfield. I've come across this before, and at first it quite confused me. I kind of thought, you know, but you don't live with us, you don't do stuff with us, how come you think you're Butterfield? But they do, and I think that's great. But it's a very, therefore, it's a very broad sort of situation. And I'm sometimes get, I think I'll be damned if I can figure out how all these people stay in connection with each other or in communication with each other. It's a bit mysterious. It's a bit nebulous. Yes. So, one more thing. Another area of Butterfield is kit, equipment. Seems to be an area I seem to be very involved in. It's not something we go out with. We don't really meet people with, but seems to be a strong flavour of the amount of equipment and stuff and the amount of maintenance that's required to keep all of that on the road, just to go out and do these things. So those are the main areas. I've got a few other broad descriptions of Butterfield, because I hear a lot of descriptions of Butterfield. So I've just got a little list of them. Butterfield, it's an outreach project. Butterfield, it's the guerrilla wing of the movement. Butterfield, it's an events company. It meets people who wouldn't come to Buddhist centres. It's ecological. And what I want to say is, I don't think I know of anyone who would agree with all those things about Butterfield. There's a bit of a defining feature of Butterfield. So I told a friend of mine I was coming today to talk. You probably all know this friend of mine, but I'm not going to tell you their name. And he said, oh, that's great. I could come and sit at the back and heckle you. And I thought, this is no joke, is it? You would sit at the back and heckle me. So that these different visions of Butterfield are alive. They're all sort of jostling within Butterfield. And I don't know quite what it is. And I have this phrase about that. It says, if somebody wants to lead Butterfield, they will end up a broken man. And I've arrived at some personal experience. And I think I keep on stupidly trying to do elements of leading things. And I keep on getting broken. Yes. So, so that's just what maybe Butterfield does. A few, well, it's quite a few qualities of Butterfield. Seems important to say that Butterfield takes place in nature. Seems a very obvious point, but it's worth saying. I've got here, it's like a bit of a best kept secret in a strange sort of way. And I've often observed that it's nature, it's the elements, it's the weather, the land, and the trees and the streams that are holding the people in Butterfield. We end up in all kind of scrapes, all kind of arguments, all kind of situations, and I feel this holding, this nurturing thing. I don't think Butterfield would have held it together if it hadn't had that positive balm around it. I just want to say what a huge inspiration the nature is for a lot of people, a lot of us. I think we can all probably relate to that. And again, I'm not going to say much more about the subject. It's a large subject, except to say, if you're interested in that, I would recommend going, I think, on the Total Immersion Retreat with Butterfield, a month's meditation in nature, if you wanted to go for that kind of flavour of thing and explore that. Another aspect of Butterfield, Butterfield and impermanence. I think this is a very defining aspect of Butterfield. And I've got a number of different aspects of that. So this is a process where people come along and we create something. We come into an empty field and an event is created. You're talking about this. All of it kind of goes on to sort of putting up what you need. And everybody comes with a different contributions on many different levels they're going to make. So people enjoy that creative process. Part of impermanence. A contact with impermanence. Well, it's profound, isn't it? To have contact with impermanence. It's a very important point, so I wanted to state it. And I think it's very good to sort of be in contact with impermanence, but in a grounded sort of way. I think there's something very interesting about that. You could spin off into all kinds of other states of mind, but because it's sort of along with being grounded, I think that's very interesting. So, no two Butterfield events are the same. So I've often seen we'll be holding the same retreat, the same time of year, in the same place, the same name, and it's just different. Something has changed. And I find it quite a tangible sense, and I think it's a very important thing. Obviously, between the summer of the retreats, there's a winter. And I think it's very useful to have a gap between doing these things. It allows kind of things to sort of fall apart, people to go their own different ways, and then come back together. Something has changed, and I really think it's a crucial part of Butterfield that there's always that element of change. It's never the same. It just couldn't make it the same if you wanted to. Which brings me to sometimes the worry that Butterfield will settle down. There are plenty of ways in which that is true, that Butterfield has settled down over the last decade. But also, I say, just Butterfield is a world of chaos, and don't worry about it. It won't settle down. It will just keep on stirring it up more than you would like. Last aspect of impermanence, which is a hobby horse of mine, is the tat down, when you pack everything down at the end of an event. I'm saying, people don't like tat downs. Everybody just, where did everybody go? And you're just left there, same old people, in the rain, trying to pack it all up. You're in a muddy field, trying to get everything clean and dry in a van and get out before you're just knackered. All these excuses as to why people need to go, but it just needs doing. So you could say people just don't like that work. I mean, it's a bit hard work. But I think it goes a lot further than that. It's just that people have quite often had a very positive experience, and when it starts to dissolve, well, people freak out on some level or another. I think you always know that from the end of the retreat. It's the advice, be careful as you're leaving. So, you know, people have the experience. They've had a big experience, and then they have to stop ripping it apart. You know, so I think that's going into a bardo. I think that's an experience of death, and I think that's why people don't like that bit of a, you know, creating something happening, then dissolving it. So I'm really fascinated by tat downs and trying to find ways to engage in them. I mean, I just think it's interesting. When I go into that bardo, what do? I just turn it into this workaholic thing that slogs. So when I go into the bardo, when I die, I mean, what kind of a... I don't know what that would produce, but it's a bit weird, and I like to think about this. So, there you go. There is a number of the different diversity of projects within Butterfield, and a couple of aspects of that. We've had nature and we've had impermanence. So now I want to look at this theme that I've got. Butterfield, top-down meets the ground up. Had other little goes at titles for this, you know, is the spiritual hierarchy, the true out of the Buddhist community, meets the bottom up, or meets consensus decision making. And another way of putting it is like, it's a space where neither of those things get their way. You know, it's a very interesting sort of space. How to describe it? So first I've started off with this thing, taking the Dharma out into other people's world and being receptive and open to what to those people's world. So with Butterfield, I don't know if this is really how it happened. It's an image I've got. Some order members went to Glastonbury Festival to teach the Dharma. So I've had this image. Go out from your Buddhist centre, from your community, from your retreat centre. Maybe it's more like that those days. And went to Glastonbury Festival to teach the Dharma. So Glastonbury Festival, what is Glastonbury Festival? It's a hedonistic place. It can be quite a wild place. I'd also say it can be quite a boring place. It's just a big business in a way. But anyway, Butterfield went to that and went to some other festivals. It went in a way into other people's world, into a world of drink and drugs. It went into a world of music, a world where there were travellers, going back 10 years or so, a sense where a number of people wanted to kick against society. Some of them were looking for an alternative, something better. I would say quite a lot of them were angry, reactionary kind of people. A whole lot of hippies. I think they probably disappeared quite a few years ago, really, the hippies, but never mind. A whole lot of dreamers, eco-warriors and partygoers. So I just think that's a crucial sort of beginning of Butterfield. Going out into these kind of worlds, teaching the Dharma, and entering into those people's worlds. And I think that is a very, says something about Butterfield. I've got to say, there's been a dialogue in a way with those worlds, So I think it leads to Butterfield having his quality of acceptance. It's definitely something I experienced when I went to Butterfield at first. I think it says more about me, but it might say something about the times as well. I had kind of got this sort of narrow sense of myself in terms of what I would allow to be me as a practicing Buddhist, and it wasn't all of me. And when I went to Butterfield, I just found ways to allow a whole load of me to be in the Sangha, in a way, in that sort of space of practice. So I saw other people saw me doing that, and I saw other people doing that. It's like, I thought, well, I suppose I, you know, allowing myself to be a bit naughty. I could go into personal details. I don't think it's actually worth going there. Not now, anyway. I see a number of people sometimes doing that at the Butterfield Festival. I see people I know from around the order, from the movement, at the Butterfield Festival, and they just let their hair down a little bit. A decade ago, I might have said they did more than just let their hair down. I don't really think that is the case much these days, but I do see sort of people just relaxing, just unwinding, just doing more of what they would just like to do. And I think it's very crucial to do that within the Sangha. It's not a thing that you leave the Sangha to go and do. You know, because you need the whole of oneself available to your practice, so it all needs to be in relationship with yourself, to your friends, the whole thing. And I think that's a very crucial part of what maybe the Butterfield Festival in particular has sort of held that kind of space. Yes. So another quality of Butterfield in this going out thing, and what has emerged from that, meaning the bottom coming up, the reactive counterculture. So there's a way in which Butterfield is a reactive counterculture. It's definitely got more than its fair share of individualists. I would say that's the order anyway, but it goes into another league, is all I can describe of it in Butterfield. And again, I think it's to do with how Butterfield was born. I think Butterfield was born in reaction to parts of the movement at certain times. I think maybe it's born at a time when there were a lot of group norms, a lot of acceptable ways of behaving, and I would describe Butterfield, it was born doing what it shouldn't do. You know, why go to teach the Dharma in a drink and drug fueled festival? That at the time it's like, what on earth are you doing? You know, that makes no sense. Actually, I really think you need to think about what you're doing. It was that sort of reaction. And that counterculture is still there. I've even heard it said, I've said tongue-in-cheek, I'm not sure it was tongue-in-cheek, in a mission statement of Butterfield, that it existed to subvert the movement. I've seen that written down in a set of minutes, and I've even said years later, oh, tick, done. yeah. So, there you go, Butterfield is reactive. It's that counterculture. And now I'd like to say, of these kind of qualities of going out, being receptive, being accepting, and being counterculture, I don't think like Butterfield is that and the rest of the movement isn't. I think that's a ludicrous way of looking things. I think it's a rather poisonous way of looking things. So I'm not saying that. But just wanted to say, it goes out into other people's worlds, it's accepting of the good and the naughty, and it is reactive and counterculture. Yes. So, two other aspects of this way to look at it. I'd like to share an image of myself in Butterfield over the last decade, which is to do with how Butterfield is and how I found the order has been. So, I joined Butterfield, I got ordained, and I found myself in a world where all the things that I thought I knew about what is a Sangha and how do you hold it and what are all the, how do I expect everyone to behave, it just all got knocked to six. And I had this experience. I looked over my shoulder, out the order, and I found the order was questioning itself. Maybe says something about a whole lot of assumptions I had made, but I think there's probably more to it than that. It just seems to be that, you know, a broader spectrum of lifestyles, of the general activities that an order member would be involved in was all happening at this time. I think I was looking for some certainty. I found there was no certainty to be had, in a way. So I've got this vision, being back in the Manchester Buddhist Centre in the mid-90s, I've got to say, I've discovered you're either on the bus or you're on a wide orbit. You know, the bus, you know, you're nothing, you're away. And what seemed to be the case was that wide orbits were the norm now, and that being on the bus was very out of fashion. You know, and I didn't know what on earth was going on, really. But I find it curious that that's how I found Butterfield, and I think it's also a process that the order has gone through. Around about the same time, I just kind of think, oh, it's probably inevitable that all this questioning, all this something other, without knowing quite where the boundaries are, was going to happen. So that's one interesting point, I think. Now I've got this phrase here. Butterfield, the legacy of being born as an alternative. So into the world of Butterfield, I'd say, comes a small but steady trickle of order members. You were saying this, if you've been rather, they're kind of disaffected with the order. They're sort of, they'd like to come to a place where they can kick against the order, where they can criticise the order. There's a steady, it's a space where people feel they can come into and do that. I can see that it's very useful for a number of people to be able to come into that space, which is still within a Sangha, and knock against them. I'm very glad there are spaces like Butterfield where people can do that without having to leave, without having to kind of leave the order before you can criticise what you've just done, I suppose, and what you've just been part of. I think it's crucially important. But it does have a downside, I suppose. That is the problem. Yes. So out of all of these sort of factors of going out, being receptive to other people, being accepting of other people, losing my train of thought, but it's going into this counterculture and a culture where the order is questioning itself in the background, and a number of order members, you know, they like to kind of slag off the order. It's a very interesting space, therefore, to try and teach the Dharma in. You know, I just find it's very undermining. You try and say something, it's all, you know, yeah, that's enough, really, just say it like that. So, how can you teach whilst being receptive to other people? It's a big question. How can you actually go and you're interested in somebody else's world and you sort of become part of somebody else's world, and how do you remember what your principles are? Sure, you can kind of, you know, it's important to teach and to invite people into practice or to challenge people to practice. To think about, well, what conditions can I set up that are conducive to these? But it always seems to fall apart. Yet how to deal with this whole counterculture thing is always kind of criticising the order. So it's not been a place where you necessarily get respected because you're an order member. I would say it's more the norm that you kind of get criticised for being an order member. I must say I found that very painful, very difficult to deal with. I know I'm not the only one. Yes, so that is some of the problems of being in that space. Yes. So out of all of that, I think I've just got an increasing sense of confidence that therefore the Dharma does need to be clearly taught in Butterfield, does need to be clearly represented. And practice, a space of practice, needs to be held within these spaces. And it's because I'm increasingly confident in that that I've come to talk to you today. That's really why I wanted to come and talk. So, there we go. That is a whole lot of what does Butterfield do, these characteristics of Butterfield, and what it's like trying to go out and hold that space, and how it just keeps on getting undermined, keeps on changing. So, that's an overview. It's taken a while. So now I want to talk about what inspires me, and why do I do what I do. So, Just one at the image I've got. I mean, I don't really think I'm that interested in going to the Butterfield Festival. Maybe that's putting it quite politely. I just do not think I want to go to this field full of people and just to hang out, to go to a whole load of very interesting, enjoyable workshops. You'd have to torture me to want to do that. I just have no interest. And I think a whole lot of people at the Butterfield Festival find that really confusing. You know, they're like, what are you doing here? They're kind of, it's really sad that you don't want to enjoy all this stuff that has been created. I think it's really sad that they don't understand what I'm doing. But so I sort of start to explain to them. So what inspires me? Because it's not that. I want to find ways of changing myself. I want to learn about how I am, what I'm like. I want feedback. Too much and I have a hissy fit, but I want feedback. And why I think I need that is I think I am very tricksy. The more I go on, the more I think, there is no end to the depth of self-deception I go to. I am really good at that. And I think I need a situation, therefore, that is going to feed it back to me. You know? It's going to challenge me in that. So, in order for this to work, I've had the audacity to come up with a little list of kind of factors. So, you need to be inspired and attracted to what you're doing. If you're not interested, if you don't just want to be where you are, where you're trying to practice, why are you going to stick out when it gets tough? I just can't see why that's going to work for very long at all. So, there is obviously something about Butterfield that inspires me, that has pulled me into it. And I think it's very good to have a whole load of attractions into a situation, from quite normal, everyday, crude attractions into it and quite lofty ones. I think it's quite good to have a whole range. I think it makes more likely that you're going to stick there. Next factor, I think there needs to be, for me, no way out. So I want to completely throw myself into a situation. I want my whole livelihood, how I survive, everything to depend on that. So I'm going to keep on trying to make it work. I don't mind kind of what happens later on in that process. I don't expect it all to work, if you see what I mean. But that's the way I want to set things up for myself. So when I start behaving badly and it gets really uncomfortable, I want nowhere to run. Another way of putting this, it's another factor, I seem to like things to be quite intense. I want all the energy stirred up. I want the energy active. Again, so it's all there to be worked with. Next point is that there has to be a dharmic framework. There has to be a set of right views, dharmic views with that. Otherwise, and I think it's where people find me confusing, I am just outlining a way of giving yourself a really torturously painful life. I think this is probably how other people see me at the Butterfield Festival. They come to have a nice time at a festival, and they meet me. I am normally overworked, and I've been overworked for months. I am stressed out. I'm really stressed out. I get really angry. I just lose it in public. It's all a disaster. Yeah? It's awful. And I just don't think they've got, you know, what are you doing? I suppose people are still like, why are you treating yourself so badly? I think it's fair enough to say at this point, I've obviously got a sadistic streak. Yeah, I can see that about myself. But there it is. That's true. It's certainly not the whole of me. So there you go. I'm into coming up against my worst traits in the middle of a very intense situation in public. I think I'm stupid. I really do. It's a really stupid place to do it. But there you go. One final factor which I've had to add in that you need to practice in this way, there has to be a sense of pleasure. There has to be a sense of nurture and of love. So I reluctantly admit it. That's how I come to this. I can see that is necessary. And I can see I am not good at this. Yes, there's a place for beauty. There's a space for the great amount of uselessness. And I think I've got a lot to learn about that. So that is what I think I am doing. I don't know what anyone else from Butterfield is doing, but that's what I am doing. So this is what I somehow came to or came across when I got involved in the Manchester Buddhist Centre renovating and transforming that Buddhist Centre. And that is why I am so grateful to the people who held that space. I know you were going through a tough time, but I had the space held for me whilst I learnt these things. And those are the things which have transformed my life, which have given my life meaning. I came along to the Buddhist Centre before that. I was interested, but it wasn't until I spent a year on a building project with a whole load of other guys, and it was intense. There were deadlines. We were all losing with each other. It seemed impossible. Everyone was stressed. You know, and I would just say, in case you're wondering, I wasn't having a pleasant time. I remember it as the time of my life, but I did not have a pleasant time. I remember being very unhappy. But it's the most meaningful time of my life. And so I just find myself continuing to do this. It's sort of what makes sense to me. So other kind of qualities about it, I'm interested when it's a collective venture and the people are inspired to do something together, to do something that reaches other people and will be attractive to other people. I will not trust myself to live alone. By which I mean, I just think I'm too selfish. I'm just going to deceive myself too much. I want to live in this communal kind of a way. I just think I will set it all up my own way and I won't challenge myself. So that is why I'm part of this Sangha in Butterfield. I want to contribute something to something that is bigger than myself. That idea that it's bigger than all the sum of all the individuals. I love experiencing that kind of creativity. And like you say, in creating Sangha in this way. I do crucially get that at Butterfield Festival. I feel people thought they'll go to a workshop and they'll do something creative. I feel I'm being very creative. It's just curious that I look like I'm in a right old state. So it doesn't come across as, you know, an attractive image of creative, which is a bit unfortunate. There we go. And also, when I look at society today, I just think there is so much encouragement to look after number one, to consume for number one, and I just want nothing to do with it. It's just repulsive to me, and I just don't think I could go there. So how that looks to the outside, as to whether that's what people see when they see me in Butterfield, I really have no idea, but in my little head, that's what I'm up to. Yeah, so I can see other people might look at it and see a whole load of unorganised hippies in a field, just there for a good time. I think it's partly Butterfield's reputation, but it's just not what I'm doing. I'm there with hundreds of idealistic, enthusiastic people wanting to transform themselves, wanting to transform the world. Quite how they want to do that. They might be a bit naive, I'll give you that. But I see that in a lot of the people I work with. A little bit, well, how does sort of Butterfield measure up for this criteria of mine for a little while? Is it a good context for transforming oneself? Well, personally speaking, for me, I found that a very good context. I'm constantly up against myself, probably too much. I do see it's a good context for other people. It depends, really, how much they commit themselves to the situation. Really, it's possible to just dip in and out of Butterfield, which is a good thing to do when a whole lot of people come along as a volunteer. You know, you come along for 5 days at a cafe event, there will be a certain amount of being challenged within that time, but I suppose it's quite often when you go deeper than that, when you stay around and join the team much longer, that I think it starts to change. So, is it inspirational and is it attractive to people? So, I've already talked quite a bit about this and just how many people seem to want to come to the Butterfield Festival and want to come and be part of teams creating the Butterfield Festival and the Butterfield Cafe. I've got this little phrase here that somehow Butterfield has got the rite of fascination licked. I can't really put my finger on what is it about it, but people seem to want to come and be part of it. I've probably talked about a number of aspects of why it's attractive, but there is something a bit mysterious about it, a bit, well, quite what is it? It's just a bit other. It's a bit alternative. So on those levels, it's attractive. I think also for a whole lot of people, the fact that they do think they're going to come and have a lovely time. they're going to get out into nature, they're going to have a nice time at festival. Well, it's very attractive for people on that level, or they just want a free ticket into a festival. I'm happy with that. That works. If that attracts people to come to the space that I'm part of, that's okay by me. I think we all came to the Dharma in all kind of strange ways. You're talking about, did you walk in into the pub or into the Buddhist centre that night? It just happened. So I'm interested in any kind of attraction, any kind of motivation. That's okay by me. So, for other people, do they practice in this way at Buddhafield where there's no way out? Well, I have to admit that most of them don't. Again, I've said it depends on their level of commitment, whether they're kind of going to get into that. I can see that's not how most people in Buddhafield practice. It's a little bit sort of up my street, really. It's a bit of a unique thing. But like I said, if you come for 5 days to help at a festival, there is a sense of that. You're there for that time. You're going to have to work through whatever happens with the people you're working with when you're cooking that morning in a cafe. You're going to have to work through that. So that's fine. And there are plenty of opportunities for people to go deeper and deeper within that. You know, I'm part of a team of 15 to 20 people who kind of live and work together all year round. So those people can come into that community if they're attracted to that, if that's what they want to do. Here, I want to talk a little bit about the site crew at the Buddhafield Festival, which is a large part of what I do at the Buddhafield Festival. And also, it's also cooking for everybody at the Buddhafield Festival, for all the team, and serving the public. So that's kind of the next good opportunity I see for me, rather than just coming to a cafe event for 5 days. We're there for about 3.5 weeks. We go into this field. There's about 2 weeks of setting up. There's 2 weeks of working up to a deadline, working with all kind of problems that come up, getting it on. Then there's this little thing that happens in the middle. It's the Buddhafield Festival. It kind of goes pop, and then it's over. And then the team carries on for another week, trying to pack the whole thing away and dissolve it and get out of there. So that's another reason I'm just... The Buddhafield Festival itself is this thing... It's the least of my worries, really, what happens during that time. So I think this is a very good context to come and be part of for 3.5 weeks, to practice with these people, to meet these people. There's literally a team of just doing that, just feeding people, cooking and doing the site work of about 100 people, maybe 120 people on site. It's quite a big team. So I find that a very strong context. So, going back a bit against my list, intensity, is there intensity in this situation for people with their energy all aroused? No intensity, you say. I think there's masses of it. They're just fired up. It's midsummer. It's the height of the year. It's all exploding. They come for all sort of excited, idealistic kind of reasons. And then there's all this work, all this task to get on, and this deadline. I've got a thing about deadlines. Something to do and deadline, put the two together, and it all just goes bang. Oh yeah, everything just... Best behaviour just flies out the window. And then I'm interested, I've sort of got a sense that I see the raw me at that kind of point. Rather alarming, but that's when I see that. Next point, so I think there's plenty of that. There's plenty of intensity there. Now I'm going to skip to my last point, that there needs to be spaciousness if it's going to work as a context for people. So actually, I think there is plenty of that. I've already talked about nature holding people. It's just naturally around people. People often, unlike me, come with quite a sort of open, inspired sort of take on things. You know, they're coming to have... they're quite open, really. I also think there's plenty of friendship there for people, and within the whole of the Buddhafield season, especially when you take into account the Buddhafield retreats, there is a lot of spaciousness. There's a lot of time for people to go into their practice. So, you know, I often, when we're working to encourage people, you know, to have times when they work very intensely with Buddhafield and time when they go on retreat with Buddhafield. I think it's crucial that people do both. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. Sometimes there is just so much work to do and so many habits that it doesn't seem to happen. So, that's most of my points about is it going to work as a context coming and being part of these teams. My final point then, is there a dharmic framework? So what happens here, because I have to say, it's a could do better sort of, that's my verdict on a situation. There is a small number of people holding Butterfield, really. Normally we get there, and I would say we're normally just exhausted from having been at umpteen other events, having got everything ready for the beginning of the season, having organised everything, got it into van and got there. So by the time the Butterfield Festival is coming into being, or we've been fixing marquees, putting up marquees, fixing vans, doing all the bookkeeping, blah, 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 blah. And then it comes to, here's the team of people we need to now turn into Dharma teachers. And I just don't find we can do it well enough. I think we're just so exhausted, we're so in a certain sort of mode. It's just a tremendous gear change, and you need to come from quite a different place to be receptive to these people and to know, say, okay, I'm just holding a space for you. I'm interested in however you are today. What's going on from you? Going on for you. So, this is really why I have come to talk today. I would say this is the rub of the whole point. This is what I think is needed. It's needed more people to come and teach the Dharma a little bit, to hold to meditation spaces, to be friends with people, to lead some rituals. Yep. I have this summary here. You know, I really value our order. I really value the teachings that we have been given and we have got. I want to share these with other people. I want to take them out into other people's world. I think it's crucial that we do that. I think we need these people and they need us. That's the sort of relationship we've got. And I really value these team-based practices as a way of doing that.